Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Tour Live. Excellent stuff indeed. I am Neil Atkinson. It's a pleasure, an absolute pleasure to be with you today. I hope you're looking forward to this. Hope you're looking forward to a fantastic weekend. It is at least men's football free, which may or may not be good for you. You've got to bear that in mind, see where your options are and all that sort of stuff. We are joined by the wonderful Lauren from Red Men TV. We have got Emma with us from the BBC, John from the Anfield Wrap, and I am Neil Atkinson, and we are with you live all the way through this. I've been given the means of production, which is remarkably exciting, so I will be picking the comments that come on screen. If you're watching this through any one of the many platforms, they better be good. None of your nonsense, none of your rubbish. It's a new standard. There's a new bar. There's a new sheriff in town, is the way in which I would refer to it, John. There is a new sheriff in town. Part one of this show, as you listen to it as Tour Live, marvellous stuff, Andy. Part one of this show is going to be about the men's team and the running for the men's team as they go from here. And then on Tour Live, or if you listen to it as a podcast, what will come after the excellent inserts we've got lined up will be a discussion about the women's team and their run-in as well. We will use the comments as we go all the way through. It is the only game in town at the moment, Emma Sanders. It is remarkable that Liverpool, I keep saying that they're on in four competitions. They're not one of them's finished because Liverpool won it. They find themselves still in three. It's going to be pretty intense. I think you look ahead at April and it just looks like game after game after game after game, all of which will feel on 70 minutes as though Liverpool really need to win this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through the fixtures again now because I've got to keep reminding myself because the schedule is just insane. But yeah, I mean, Watford, Benfica, City, Benfica, City, I mean, and then you look at United, you've got Everton, Newcastle. It's just, it is absolutely relentless. And obviously those Champions League games sort of smack bang in the middle of the crucial title games. I mean, there's no beating around the bush now. The game against City, I think the title hangs on it. You know, people will say that points will be dropped either way, you know, potentially from both teams, but I just can't see either team dropping points at the moment. So I think Liverpool have to go to the Etihad and win that game. And if they win that game and then win the rest, then they win the league. So yeah, it's a massive, massive, massive month.
There's the huge arrow for us, Lauren, on that game at the Etihad. And I think it's worth sort of dwelling on why, when I say for us, because rightly or wrongly, we expect Liverpool to be able to do well against Benfica. Because rightly or wrongly, we look at a game like Watford at home as one of the most straightforward games you could hope for off the back of an international break. Your laser focus then is on the Etihad. It's on what will feel like the big one. And as Emma says, it's as much how it'll feel, I think, as to how it'll play out, if you know what I mean. Because if Liverpool fall to defeat, it'll feel catastrophic. If Liverpool win the game, you get the impression it may well be the thing that gives them the adrenaline boost to finish off the job in the league.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you're not even looking at any other fixtures but that one, I feel like, at the minute. But yeah, you're right in what you're saying. You know, if you go there, you take all 3 points, you know, you're going to be on cloud nine thinking about the rest of the season and thinking that you can go on and win absolutely everything. But I feel like a lot of people are like that now with the way Liverpool have played so far this season. I don't think it's just going to rely on that game because, you know, it's the same as when City waited or Everton the other weekend. It was, oh, they have to drop points here for us to get back in it. It's not. It can be at any point in the season that we can drop points or they can drop points or we can gain points on them. So, yeah, although I think our laser focus is on that game, I think, you know, you're going to look at every other match and think, you know, that team can take points off them there as well.
I think that'll be the way it feels in the comments. We've got a little shout out from someone saying that, you know, everyone's rightly looking at the City game, but Watford feels massive because City have got to go to Burnley later in the day. Now, John, City have got a great record against Burnley, if we're all honest about it. But this is what the running means. This is where it becomes ding-dong, if you know what I mean. Liverpool get something out of Watford, which we do expect reasonably. And then suddenly, if you're City, you can imagine it just becomes a little trickier. It becomes, you know, they'll know, they'll have the sense of it, and they'll know that when the pressure is on.
Yeah, I mean, as a man who's seen Watford win on Merseyside this season live at Goodison Park, at the best,
which was also epoch defining, I'd say.
Well, the best game I've been to this season, and the next day I went to Old Trafford to see Liverpool win 5-0. So they are a dangerous side. They're a funny team, but you know, you just back Liverpool to get through with everything going on at the moment, and for the momentum they've got and all the stuff that. You know, that Lauren was talking about before, about the fact that, you know, we feel it on top at the moment. We're feeling great. We're feeling confident. And so I backed them to do the business against Watford, despite the fact that they have attacking threats and they are sort of slightly mad. And then it goes into that Burnley one. And they have got a good record there, but often the toil a little bit like we did, to be fair. And it's a big player who stepped up. And I've just got a feeling this might be one of those games. When we speak to David Mooney, who does the Blue Moon, and he helps us out with our, you know, Coach Home and Friday Show and the shows we do with other fans, he says, most games this season, we don't miss a number nine, but there'll be certain ones where we do. And I've just got a feeling that I wish we could pick Sergio Aguero, or wish we had him for the last 20 minutes, or someone on that who can just come on and just get half a yard of space and make something happen. And that's not to say that they can't go in there and do the Man City-ness and win 3-0, because obviously they can. But I just, I don't know, I've just got a sneaking suspicion that this might, you know, not say, and listen, they might bobble one in off a corner like we did off Fabinho, but I think it's going to be a tough one, and I think it is going to be one of those 7 or 8 times in a season where they're wishing they had a number nine.
I mean, let's hope that that's the case, Emma, because that would line that game at the Etihad up brilliantly if Liverpool were able to go their top. It is worth saying, Liverpool will at least, if they get the result they need to get against Watford, they will at least go top briefly. And that is where the back and forth of all this does come in. When you say about the game at the Etihad, the one thing that sort of occurs to me is everyone's in their own mind. We've all decided the game at the Etihad's only got two possible outcomes. There is a third one, which is a draw. They are allowed in league football because in everyone's head, everyone keeps saying it's like a cup final. Everyone's forgetting that it's not as though whichever Mancunian referee is refereeing, it's not going to go on 90. You've got to play 30 minutes more. You know, that's not going to happen. There's not going to be a penalty shootout. We do have to acknowledge there is a chance that those two teams do manage to cancel each other out at the Etihad.
Yeah, I mean, just for reference, I'd take a penalty shootout because Kelleher is an absolute legend.
I want to semi-finals now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And actually, in Liverpool's favour is obviously, you know, the goal difference at the moment. So that could play a potentially big part. And I think that's got to be in the mind of the players as well. It's not only do they need to, you know, keep picking up points, but also bear in mind the possibility that things like goal difference and things like that could potentially come into play at the end of the season. So be clinical, take your opportunities, get as many points as you can, obviously, but also put away those chances. Don't take too many risks in terms of, you know, trying to go all out for 80, 90 minutes when you're perhaps 1-0, 2-0 up in a game and then potentially, you know, go and concede one or two sloppy goals. Play it safe, but also, you know, be clinical and take your opportunities. I think that's really important. So you're absolutely right. The City game, look, I completely understand Lauren's point in terms of, you know, the other games, and you can't just pin it all on one game, but I don't think anyone's denying that that is the one game that you can't afford to lose. Like you say, yeah, you don't necessarily have to win it, but from a Liverpool perspective, you absolutely can't afford to lose that game.
It will be, as and when it comes round, Lauren, that will be the focus, but Benfica is a thing. We still don't know when the cup semi-final will be, also against City. That is a thing.
By the way, I've got bars in Detroit messaging me, asking me when that cup semi-final is. That's how ridiculous it is. I'm like, I don't know, mate, sorry. I'm like, well, we need to book it. We need to get it on. We need to open up. I'm like, I'm sorry. So they need to sort it. For the bars in America, they need to sort that schedule.
I'm with that 100%, John. And hopefully that does happen, because everyone, I mean, it's not just their schedule, it's everyone's schedule. Everyone's got to know when and where this is. And Lauren, this is it's a crazy little one, this. That still isn't sorted out. It's mad that the whole Wembley thing is ongoing in amongst it as well. But the point being is that whatever happens at the Etihad, there's still many, many, many more massive games to come for Liverpool this season. And for me, this is the key. This is the reason to bounce into April and go from game to game is that it'll be absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, it'll be a great month of football for us. Obviously, I think looking at our Champions League tie, it's a little bit less of a headache compared to City's, which might play in our favour ahead of that match. I think Pep will be tearing his non-existent hair out for facing Diego Simeone's Atletico. But yeah, it's a really interesting fixtures. Yeah, it's just really exciting as a fan that you can look forward to these games and see them coming up and think, well, we can take 3 points there, we can take 3 points there. You're not looking at any of them thinking, that's going to be a tough one, that's going to be a tough one, which is sort of, it's really nice going into a new month of fixtures.
Dermot Canty's just put in the comments there, John, I think it's really interesting. Take out the City games, the toughest we'll have in the month. Benfica is in there. There's a couple of others that are in there. He mentions Everton and United, and they'll feel like emotional affairs. But this is back to my thing. For me, the game I was most concerned about in April, separate to the one against Manchester City, was the one against Villa. That's now not going to get played then. The game, if I was a City supporter, I'd be most concerned about would have been the one against Wolves. That's not going to happen now. My point is more, I think weirdly for Liverpool and Manchester City, I do believe the established order of, well, you're most likely, if you're first and second, you're most likely to get beaten by the third best team and then the fourth best team in the league and then the fifth best team in the league. I just don't think that's the case. And that to me is the really strange thing about both of these sides, really. City, I think, have still got to go to West Ham. If West Ham haven't got European commitments, I think they could make that horrible for them. I'm not that worried about United. I'm worried about Villa. Yeah, I'm worried about Southampton away. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not about the league table. It's more about the specific threat, the way in which certain teams play.
100%. And listen, I might end up looking stupid now, and time will tell. And it normally makes me look stupid eventually, somehow. But I think, were any of us that hopeful when United went to City? Do you know what I mean? Like, you watched it, and when they went 1-0, you got a little bit excited. But really, we were all fully expecting what to happened. Whereas Burnley at the weekend, I'm one raised eyebrow, Neil. And so... And so I'm going in with that emoji on my face. And so I think it is all about games. I completely agree with you. I think we'll be fine against United. Everton as well. You talk about the energy of sort of playing Everton. That's largely us. The team, like, we've had some tough games against them. There's obviously the Divock Origi late one and stuff like that. But we've had more where we've been on the beach for 70 minutes. And it's who wants to go on and play against these shower. Do you know what I mean? We've had more like that at Anfield under Jurgen Klopp and probably past managers as well. And so, I think that's a sort of more likely scenario to me than Everton, giving us a really good game, whether they're fighting for their lives or not. And so there'll be tough ones, and there'll be a mad unexpected one as well. And maybe it is Southampton, when they suddenly turn up and they look like Brazil 1970 and you're like, I can't be bothered with this.
They defend like George Graham's Arsenal and you're stunned by it. You ship nine at times. What's this? Yeah. Where's this come from?
More impressive than me and Lauren on the dance floor at my 40th. greater moves. And so, that's... And so that's the situation we're in, but we're looking forward to it. I love the comment before saying April's going to be the best month following the Reds until May, and it is true. we get through April, we've got sort of May to look forward to as well, and it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait.
The psychology of it's, I think, really important, Emma, in that the thing that I was really intrigued by what the manager said after the Arsenal game, which was he had to remind the players that they're the ones who enjoy it when it gets hard.
Yeah,
and I'm very, I'm very. I think that this is where Liverpool like the idea of it being tough, of it being a bit uncontrolled. I think City love it when it's tough, and I think we shouldn't talk them down. What they do in 18-19, when they win every game from January through to May, pretty much is remarkable, and I think they haven't had enough credit for it. But I don't think they like it when it gets out of control. And I think that's one of the differences. And I think it's one of the reasons why they struggle at times to change games that get set a certain way, like the one against Crystal Palace. They don't want to put it out of control on the one hand. And on the other hand, they feel susceptible if it does go that way. So they're doing everything they can to stop that, even when it's 0-0 in a game that they need to win. And for me, this is what could end up working for Liverpool, is I think City's desperation to stay in control when they've got massive games like Liverpool and like Atletico Madrid back-to-back, and then Chelsea or Real Madrid if they get through. There's only so much you can control, is my point.
Yeah, and I think if you flip it in terms of from Liverpool's perspective, being the chasers, I think they would absolutely, yeah, obviously you want to be top of the table, you want to be the team that's got more points, but in terms of that, the psychology of it, actually being the chasers is probably, that suits Liverpool in terms of everything that comes with it, you know, the fan base, the club itself, the attitude, it's, you like being a team that almost achieves what people don't think you're going to achieve. And when you look back, and you know, a few months ago when everyone was saying that it, you know, City had basically, you know, they were champions elect and it was 10 points clear, this was the chase that Liverpool were like, you know what, we really fancy this. So I think when you flip it in that sense, it works in Liverpool's favour. But absolutely, in terms of City, I had this conversation actually. I think, yes, despite the rivalry of the two teams in terms of going for the title in recent seasons, I think this is probably the first season where there's been a lengthy period where City are actually being hounded and chased, and the gap is getting smaller and smaller and smaller over a period of time, because it, obviously in previous seasons there's been different things, whatever, Liverpool being in the lead, COVID, whatever, injuries, etc. So it, I don't know, like for me, this just feels a little bit different to previous seasons where it actually is a bit more of a kind of a neck and neck race for, like I say, for a long period of time. So I'm really fascinated to see how City sort of, you know, kind of respond to that. And I've seen a couple of interesting comments about the kind of the psychology of playing Burnley and then playing Atletico. And I think that's really interesting as well, because when you speak about control, Atletico Madrid are a team that almost let you have control of the ball, but they don't let you control the tempo of the game. And it's small things like that, which I think City might, they might struggle with when they're under pressure. So yeah, absolutely.
The I just popped up there, someone mentioning the Salah contract situation, Lauren. The one thing Liverpool could do without is external distractions. And I think that this is a group that do seem really good at blocking out noise and all of that. But it is fair to say that Salah himself, you know, it felt like a big deal for him scoring the penalty away at Brighton. It felt as though something that he felt he needed to do in that game at that moment. You know, it would be, the contract thing is going to be ongoing from the sound of things. It doesn't feel as though it's getting solved anytime soon. If there's one thing that you would like, you know, on top of just the idea that they just come to an agreement and he signs it, is that at least as a controversial question, it goes quiet from Liverpool's point of view for a few weeks. I think Laura might not be able to hear me. Okay, I will pass over.
Going in and out.
Oh, sorry, Lauren. Sorry. Same thing to you then, John. I'll just be very smooth and you can answer it.
I think that's fair, but I don't see him being distracted too much. And also, I guess what we've got to remember is quiet for us isn't necessarily quiet for him. So out of the papers is nice for us, you know, in terms of our our blood pressure and our worry about the whole thing. But just because it isn't there doesn't mean that he's not having conversations and he's not, you know, having our friend Rami come on and say, well, Juventus have got a say, they're interested if it's a free next summer and stuff like that. But whatever it is, you know, how sort of, you know, much of it is it or little of it in his life, I don't think there's anyone who loves winning trophies for Liverpool as much as Mo Salah. You know, when you see it on his face, you know, when we won the Premier League, the Champions League as well, he's obviously got his own personal ambitions, but I think genuinely for Liverpool as well, he just loves winning trophies with his mates.
I think he also sees how it's all intertwined as well, John.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think I'd almost be more worried if it was October, November, and all this was going on. I feel like, you know, the season is paced, you know, in our favour in this regard. He's coming back from the international break, and you know he knows that this is the business end, and there's no sort of messing about now. And I think it would have been possible for him to sort of be distracted if it was earlier in the season and Leicester played for. But now I just can't see it, because he's too focused. He's too good as well, to be honest with you. But also, honestly, I just think he adores winning trophies for this football club.
I think that the part of it, Lauren, and the unspoken thing, the thing that we find it difficult to talk about, and I'm going to have a big chat about it in Belfast, Dublin and Cork this weekend, is there's another part for all of these players, including Salah, where they haven't had the party from the last league win. And I think that still becomes a live problem for them, Lauren. I think this is something that they'd love to solve. I think, you know, obviously they're desperate to win. They're very highly driven professionals. But I think they know what it would mean to be able to parade a league title around the streets of Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they missed out on that last time, and it was such a shame that it happened in the way it did. And that'll always be something that'll stick with them. So going into this season and them kind of bringing the points gap back down now and it being a real opportunity for us to go and win another league title, it'll be absolutely huge. And you can imagine the scenes, you know, around the city there if something like that does happen. And you can imagine as well that if we've got a few more trophies to add to that. So, yeah, it's something that the squad will be definitely thinking about, and that'll give them an extra boost to it as well, which is always promising for us.
It is something across all the piece on this, Emma. And it's the same with the women's team, and we are going to come on and talk about the women's team in the second part of this show. It's about Liverpool asserting themselves. And that, I think, is the key question, that Liverpool have got to find the way that they assert themselves across the rest of these games and then continue that assertion. I think it's an important thing. You know, Liverpool haven't got to live as champions properly. And that's another reason why I quite like to see it happen, both on the pitch and off the pitch. Liverpool haven't had a season as champions. We haven't acclaimed the champions. We haven't had any of that. You know, and there's obviously, I'm always desperate to see Liverpool win any trophy, and I'm desperate to see them win the league title. But it would be great if they got to have that little run, both on the pitch and off, as the idea that Liverpool are the champions of England.
Absolutely. And this generation of players deserves that kind of that championing of their play, I guess, in a way. You know, they deserve to rock out as the best team, as the champions. They deserve to come out to a stadium packed full of fans where they've had a parade and the fans can sing for them as champions. They deserve all of that, because in my lifetime, this has been the best, by far the best generation of Liverpool players. So they deserve to have that kind of stage. And I think, as Lauren says, it's almost like going into the season, it was like an added bite, given what had happened last season, that it was just a bit of a write-off because of circumstances that they couldn't control. And now that they can control it, they can control the way they play, they can control the way that they conduct themselves. We as fans can control, you know, the way we welcome the team and the way we sort of, you know, support them in terms of making them feel like champions. And I think that's the difference this season. And yeah, you're right. It's important that they get that.
The other thing that's come today, John, it's in there. Anto Roberts has asked if we'd touch on the NFT announcement. Liverpool have announced that they are running a number of NFTs. If you don't know what NFT stands for, it stands for non-fungible token. The best way to view it is that the idea of stuff that's online that can't be copied, there can be limited editions or just one of things. Liverpool have pulled something together around effectively comic book representations of the footballers. You can draw a parallel of sorts with Panini stickers. I don't quite think that stacks, because you can't collect them all. I mean, you could, but you'd be a remarkably wealthy human with far too much time on his or her hands if you were to do so. It is the sort of thing, John, that, I'll be honest, it sort of rubs me up the wrong way, and certainly the way in which, you know, it's come out. You know, it's not something that I'd be interested in. It is fair to say it's been interesting to see how the announcement's been handled today and the information Liverpool are putting out there. It's also very, very, very 2022.
Yeah, it is. It's come out as of this afternoon. The reaction I've seen is you know, from people's replies and other tweets is quite extremely against it and quite angry. I'm sort of struggling to get to that level of anger, to be honest with you, but that's often the case when I'm on Twitter and looking at things. You know, is that wow, this is a very extreme reaction to something that I don't necessarily possess. I'm with you. I sort of think it's a bit shit, but apart from that, I'm you know, it's, I wouldn't buy them. It's £55 seems quite a lot of, well, a lot of money to me for some of a digital thing. But then I think £100 for the stadium shit as well. And so it just feels to me like it's another thing that Liverpool are making that I'm not going to buy, which is quite, outside of tickets and a pint at half time, is a lot of things. And so I buy stuff at Ted as well. Do you know what I mean? From the club shop. And so, but there's a lot of things that Liverpool are up to that I'm not really that bothered by, but also doesn't sort of, you know, particularly piss me off. And so it's interesting to me that this does kind of give such a big level of anger. And I don't know whether I maybe don't know enough about it, and maybe if I knew more, it would piss me off. But then I seriously doubt everyone who's getting as angry as the people are online know an incredible amount more than me. I'm sure some do, but I don't think it necessarily is the case. So I don't know.
I think the space is really interesting. You know, we could literally do one if we wanted to. We could turn the show into one. I'm sort of, and I think it could be good for creators. And I'm thinking not necessarily about, for instance, the podcasters. You know, we'll be fine. I'm thinking about artists and musicians and all that sort of stuff. The idea of being able to produce limited edition work, I think it's a really interesting space and concept for that. I think that Liverpool could move into doing something quite interesting around there as well. This is the first sort of toe into it. It just sort of looks to me like something that's for kids. And I'm fine with Liverpool doing stuff that's for kids because they're not making me do it. But the flip side is, you know, there have been environmental concerns. It's interesting Liverpool have gone out of the way to make clear they've tried to find the most environmentally friendly option. I think that that's, you know, it's interesting they felt the need to want to put that out there. But for me, I'm made up. It's not fucking crypto, to be frank. I'm made up. It's not fan tokens. That's the stuff that I don't want them to go near. And that's where the stuff that I think just feels quite dangerous and quite murky, to be honest with you. A few pictures of footy players looking like Iron Man, I'm sort of all right with, I think.
Yeah, because I've seen people say, oh, people are going to lose money on these. And I think people sort of get that you're buying them to buy it. And if you want to sell it, it might lose value. Or, you know what I mean? Like you know, buying anything. And so I don't really sort of, you know, understand that argument that it's gambling as such. I think pretty much, you know, 99% of people are going to buy these because they're a Liverpool fan and they want to own something cool. I don't think this is going to be getting scores of investors from around the globe thinking they're going to make sort of fortune.
So there's a couple of comments here, just very quick. Someone said it is crypto, and Anna Roberts has said NFT. Are a way of inflating cryptocurrency. My view on that is that you don't have to use cryptocurrency to buy them, and Liverpool have been really explicit about that. So, you know, I think that there is definitely elements of this, and this is where all the murky space is. And obviously it is a blockchain thing. It is in there, but I think it's clear that on this one, having read through the stuff and looked at it, you don't need to be using crypto in order to be able to do it. And they are meant to be collectibles. There's 180,000 of them. They should not be increasing in value. And let's be crystal clear. If you're buying one of these thinking it's going to increase in value, and you've got another thing coming, there's fucking loads of them.
Might sell them in the summer. Then it's worth fuck all. Like your John Arnavisa top from 2006 or whenever it was.
But my wider point, John, which I'm cross about, I'm going to put it on the graphic on the screen, and it's put out today by Tariq Panja, and it's the money clubs and the turnovers of clubs from this year. And Tariq quoted a City fella who put it on his LinkedIn, and I'm not going to make a show of him or specify who that was because we're not mean like that. But you've got the money league clubs, and City are number one with 644 million euros being City's turnover across the course of the year. Liverpool sit seventh, 550, not very far behind Manchester United. My point about all of this, first and foremost, is Liverpool do not have, let's call it diplomatically, the natural advantages that Manchester City very much seem to enjoy for themselves. And Manchester City, by the way, have gone into crypto and have got a crypto partner that does crypto derivatives that are not regulated in the United Kingdom. Let's just be fucking crystal clear about that. But I'd like there to be a little bit more of Liverpool going. This is the clear blue water between us and them. But a bit of that means that sometimes we're going to have to do some stuff you don't like.
Yeah, 100%. And if I am going to get angry at anything, it's the fact that Liverpool have almost sort of forced into this space. And look, forced is too strong. I sort of accept that. But, you know, we're in a situation where I just feel like, you know, we've got in one hand, you know, we've frozen ticket prices, season ticket prices for the seventh year in a row yesterday, which is brilliant. So we're trying to keep tickets artificially low. I accept that they're not low, but they're lower than what they could charge. Then we've got people, you know, clamoring, including me, to give Salah a new contract, you know, pay Salah what he wants. Wages have artificially increased. Salah's demands are higher, but because there's people like Manchester City and people like PSG who are able to basically, you know, artificially inflate, you know, commercial revenue and do that. And so they're in this situation. And this is where I feel a bit sorry for Liverpool in that, you know, we want our clubs to run a certain way, and I get that, but we also want to compete. You know, we're all talking on here about you know, trophies, but wanted to go
winning the league,
winning the lot,
head to head with Manchester City, who are backed by a state,
winning the lot. And you know, you can only do that by bringing in sort of money. And each one of these steps, you know, often makes me feel a little bit comfortable. I didn't like the sleeve sponsor. I'll be honest with you. I didn't like it. It was an extra thing. I'm not old enough just to remember when the shirt sponsors came in, but I couldn't really be arsed with the sleeve sponsor. And then someone told me it was 10 million quid a year, and I went, yeah, all right. So it's one of those situations, isn't it? It's like we're all clamoring between what's important to us. Is it the soul of a football club? Is it winning? Is it, you know, recognizing things out there? Is it morality? And it's a combination of all of them for all of us, including, by the way, people who work for Liverpool Football Club. We were trying to sort of balance these things all the time. So I think it's difficult. I'd rather they didn't do it. I can't see myself getting too angry about it. And to be honest, Neil, if this wasn't my job, I'm not even sure it'd be on my radar at all. And I'm in WhatsApp groups with Liverpool fans, and they're talking about how they're getting to Benfica. And honestly, I think, and it was notable there was only one comment on this chat before sort of we started. So I don't think if this wasn't my job, it'd be on my radar at all.
I don't think it'd be on mine either. Just very, very quickly, the most exclusive club you can be a member of at Liverpool Football Club costs £570 a year. It is the attendance to 19 away games. That is the club that everybody wishes they were part of as you go uphill and down Dale. This is Tour Live. It also goes out as a podcast. We've done some images there. John, I cut and cropped that image I used during that show as we were talking, pulled it into the space and then put it on the screen. This is what happens if you give me the means of production, John. I'm capable of anything. Let's just wonder what's going to come in part four. It's a pleasure to have Lauren. It's a pleasure to have Emma with us as well. Coming up, if you listen to this as a podcast, you've got Harriet with Comfort of Comfort Angels, a women's refugee team in Toxteth. And also Harriet speaking to Taylor Hines, which segues very, very nicely indeed into us being able to talk about Liverpool women and what the rest of the season looks like for them.
And I am now joined for Tour Live by Hannah Robertson, the co-founder of Shadow, and Comfort Etim, the creator of community football team Comfort Angels. And we've also got Kate here, who plays for Compass Angels, to tell us a little bit more about the project that they're doing. So Hannah, first of all, to start with you, can you tell us a bit about the work that Shadow does and how you use storytelling as a medium to inspire change?
Yeah, absolutely. So Shadow, we're a community of artists, activists, and journalists, kind of using lived experience storytelling to create change. What I mean by that really is that it's kind of, we've always believed that those who have a lived experience of an issue or an injustice or a topic are the best place to create change within that field, within that space. So we've always wanted to create Shadow as a platform for people to kind of take control of their own stories, like take control of the narrative, because so often people are talked about or talked for, but very rarely given space just to kind of take control of their own stories.
Amazing. And your latest project is a documentary called Comfort's Angels, and it focuses on the community team in Toxteth. So Comfort, you're obviously here with us and you're the driving force behind the team. So can you offer a bit of an insight into how it started and its aim?
Well, officially, Comfort Angels started in 2019. And just like Hannah mentioned, I have lived experience in terms of playing football. And one thing football has done for me is giving me opportunity and platforms that I would not necessarily have been able to achieve. Got a job and had the opportunity, you know, to bring in physical activities into a safe space for women where I work. And, you know, what best do I know other than football? So immediately the thought of using football as an initiative to empower women, to promote integration and also to improve mental and physical well-being, you know, of those women was, you know, the drive, the motive behind, you know, Comfort Angels. I know it sounds like it's my name, but it's not. It's just what the women thought was necessary for the team to be called. But, you know, it was just the fact that I saw an opportunity whereby, you know, we can use football also to reduce isolation amongst women and just create that, you know, safe space where women can come together and basically just express themselves, you know, by playing football. So it doesn't matter what age, you've got children, you know, it's just a space for you to come and socialize and just make friends and meet new people. Hence, the team is very diverse. But I would definitely say that, you know, the first is just basically the experience that I've had, you know, in this country playing football and what it has offered me. And I'm hoping, you know, we're able to use this space as well to give that our women, you know, the same opportunities.
Amazing. And Hannah, you're doing a documentary now. And I just wanted you to tell us a bit more about the documentary that you've made and tell us about why you decided that Comfort Angels were the group to sort of represent the power of football and the power of women and the power of community action.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a long time in the making. I'm sure that many people have had very similar things. We first kind of started coming up to Liverpool to meet the team, to meet Comfort, to meet Stu Carrington, who's the inclusion officer and their coach as well. We first started coming up in February 2020. Obviously, then all filming got paused. But yeah, I mean, like as soon as we found out about Comfort Angels, which is an Amnesty International funded football team, we knew that we wanted to create a piece around something that was so special and so unique, we thought, because, yeah, I mean, as Comfort speaks about much more eloquently than I will, the football team is kind of a space for women, especially but not limited to kind of refugee women and women who are seeking asylum, to just come together to exercise, of course, like to get good at football, absolutely, but then also just to kind of find community. And what better city to do it in than Liverpool, of course. It's just such a big footballing city. And Hugh says something really amazing about all the women, and he just says, oh, it doesn't matter if they kind of like support Liverpool or Everton or anything, they've just become Associated Scousers just because they play the game.
Yeah, and Kate, you obviously play for the team, so love to hear a bit more about how you got involved and how you can you see firsthand how it can be used as a tool for inclusion and for change.
First things first, when you see the group, you have all shades of colours, from white to the darkest dark, all age groups, from zero, my son was zero when he joined the group, to the oldest. So, like Comfort said, the inclusiveness or the inclusion about the team that actually that got me really involved in the team. First of all, there's nobody there to judge you. It's just a safe space. He was really young when I joined the team, and to be fair with you, I when I go there, I don't even know where he is until I'm done playing my game. Like I flex like in the game. Like I have the freedom to do whatever I want to do, and somebody's taking care of him. That's first things, because when you have a newborn and you're at home, the depression that comes with being with the newborn and the whole talk and everything. But once you are in the team, you are like a bed, like nothing comes to mind. Just be free and be yourself. At the end of the day, you've gotten through that day. In fact, you've gotten through the week, just once a week, but you've gotten through the week just by playing for Comfort Angel on Mondays. So that's number one. Then secondly, you really... Comfort as a leader, she has got a way of making you like I'm still living the experience. And when you think about the whole money thing, when you go, she reimburses you, so you just go flex and you take your money and go back home, you know, that kind of a thing. So the kids are wonderful, the mothers are wonderful, and every single person. So it's a safe place. You're not worried about anybody judging you. That's the most important thing. So, and then you get to exercise too. With Comfort Angels, I lost like 25 kg. So.
Good exercise, yeah, as well then. And obviously Comfort, you've been through the asylum system firsthand and know how difficult it is when you're going through all of that. And how important is it that you're able to find a community and able to find a place where you feel safe and you feel like you belong?
So again, this is all, you know, through the experience that I've faced, and it's something that Kate mentioned, and I just want to buttress on that a little bit, is the fact that having that firsthand knowledge and experience, you know, the team is not a place where we come and talk about the asylum system. You know, I mean, questions have been asked. Obviously, I've got my expertise, experience in terms of, you know, professional side of it, but we try as much as we can to pack that aside and just have fun, because before we were, you know, seeking sanctuary in the UK, and just for people who don't know, and we hate using that word asylum seeker, but before we were asylum seekers in this country, we were humans. And that is one thing that I would like for us to first and foremost embrace. So, you know, when Kate say you're just free, you're there, you're just embracing everything. It's just the fact that, you know, at that moment, we don't want to be thinking about anything other than just women coming together and empowering each other. It's not about your status. It's not about, you know, what you have and what you don't have. It's just organic, if you will. So, you know, it was so easy for me to have such a community of women because of the fact that, you know, I have seen or faced and have like that knowledge of what they're going through and can empathize with them. Hence, creating that space, I put myself in their shoes. Like, when I was still, you know, going through the system, which technically in some ways I am still, you know, what would I have wanted in a space like Comfort Angels? So I would want somewhere really diverse because, you know, we have a lot of barriers, especially when you're seeking sanctuary, things like language barriers. And, you know, Hannah mentioned Liverpool, you know, we want the Scousers to join us so we can speak Scouse, if that makes sense. So we want to feel part of Liverpool community. So hence the diversity, you know, hence we make it so inclusive for everyone to join because, you know, there's just beauty in diversity. You know, everybody comes with it. You know, can you, like, I know we're having this moment whereby it just feels like it's all about football, but we have other plans in the future whereby, you know, we can share culture, share food. You know, I want to be able to make scouse. I do make scouse actually, but not the greatest one. You know, I want to learn something from, you know, Hannah, the goalkeeper. Like, I want to learn how to make Albanian food. And, you know, I want to learn from our Eritrean women. Like, we've got women from different countries. So, you know, it was so easy because I knew what I wanted. So I basically put myself in the shoe, hence, you know, the safe space, and hence, you know, the way we've kind of like navigated it throughout the years. And I'm open to the women's suggestion. This is not all about me. You know, at the end of the day, it's them just, you know, being able to tell me, okay, Comfort, how about we do this? How about we? They come up with different suggestions. You know, they even suggested that they want to become referees. They want to do their level one coaching. So it's just basically feeling their vibe. For lack of better word, and just being able to run with it, you know, because given that platform and that opportunity, where I am now, there's some knowledge, a little bit. I'm not, you know, claiming to know all, but the little knowledge and the little capacity that I have, you know, I'm able to help them achieve their dream just the same way I would have wanted someone else to help me, you know, if I was still in that same situation. So, yeah.
It's absolutely incredible the work that you're doing, and Hannah, obviously it's amazing that the documentary is shining light on all of the incredible things that the team are doing. Tell me a bit more about what you learned during the process of creating the documentary and what you learned about Comfort Angels and how you perceive it from the outside.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of joyous to be able to create a documentary and to kind of, I think video is such a like important form of storytelling as well. And just, I think there's so much joy with the women when they're playing football. There's so much love in between them as well, which is really amazing. And I think I really want to pick up on what Comfort said about how, you know, like this, Comfort Angels isn't a space for people to kind of like talk about the asylum system, to talk about like their problems. It's a space for freedom. And that's something that you really, really notice. Like, I mean, you'll notice yourself if you ever come down to a training or to one of their matches. There's just so much kind of solidarity there. And I mean, it's well known that kind of women face a unique set of barriers when it comes to kind of migration, when it comes to the asylum system. And even if you've like, once you've got asylum, there are like a range of barriers that come with being a woman. And then a space like Comfort Angels is just a space where there's a real freedom and there's a real, it's empowering. It's empowering to see.
Amazing. And how do people watch the documentary if they want to find out a bit more?
Yeah, so it will be going live on YouTube, but the easiest way to find it will probably be on our website, which is shadow-mag.com. And we're actually screening the premiere of the documentary on Saturday. So we're having a big kind of celebration and a big event in the Baltic Hotel at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Where the women are going to come and children are invited, and we're going to have a big exhibition. We'll be screening the documentary, and it'll just be a space for us all to enjoy what we've come to kind of create over the past few years.
Incredible. And Kate and Comfort, if people want to get involved and want to start playing, how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, before I just say that, can I just say thank you so much to Shadow, Easy, Hannah, the whole team. Like, it's just been an amazing experience, you know, coming to the tournament with us and basically just recording this, you know, publicity is something that we never had. We never had the opportunity again because we didn't know how to go about it. But you guys have just stepped on, you know, stepped in and taken the whole thing to another level. Like, I sent the invitation and someone was really blown away how far, you know, we've come, and that is due to how you've been able to portray us and show, you know, everyone, you know, what we're doing. So I'd like to use this opportunity to say a very, very big thank you to you and your team. And yes, if you would like to be part of Comfort Angels, we are at Tiber 5 till 6 every Monday. It's on Tagore Street, just off Lodge Lane, Manchester Superstore. You won't miss it. And if you want to check us out or send us a message on our social media platform on Instagram, we are Comfort Angels 21 on Instagram, and we're also on Twitter, Comfort Angels. And also, you can reach us on our, you can send us a message on our telephone number, which I would try and get now and say it's 07883811170. That's 07883811170. Someone will surely get back to you on how to reach us.
Thank you. Well, it's all incredible what you're doing, and I'm really looking forward to watching the documentary and seeing all the work that you've put together and shining a light on the brilliant team that is Comfort Angels and the incredible space that they've created to empower women in the city of Liverpool. And I've been to a few training sessions now myself, and it's such a wonderful space to be able to watch and witness. So yeah, if you do want to get involved, definitely support, get involved, follow on all the social pages, and also watch the documentary that Shadow have put together as well. Thank you all so much for joining me.
And it's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap, and this is the live read, courtesy of Audio Boom. So thanks a lot to them for supporting us, and thanks to Harry's Razors for coming on board again. And Harry's is much more than a super sharp razor company, so we use their razors and we really, really like them. But the trial set they're offering you now is all about revamping your whole routine. So in this trial set, you get the expertly engineered weighted handle, you get 1 5-blade cartridge crafted by artisans in their very own German factory. You get the handy foaming shave gel for effective lubrication. Now the shaving gel is another level. I used another one recently when I was traveling, and my neck's my skin's generally very, very sensitive, and I noticed the difference on the neck, let me tell you. So the shaving gel is top, especially if you do have sensitive skin. You also get the travel blade cover for life's adventures, and when adventures are back, if you go to Lisbon, I'll be sure to pack my blade cover. And of course, now a free shower gel. And this is just for Anfield Wrap subscribers. So if you go through the website, you don't get that. But for our people, they're throwing in a free shower gel as well. So yeah, it's a fantastic shave. Me and Neil both use it. I've not used the shower gel yet, so I can't endorse that, but very much endorse the shave gel that comes with it. As I say, for a man with sensitive skin, I really, really appreciate it. So if you want to give this a try, and it's all for $3.95, just the delivery. So the delivery is $3.95. That's all you have to cover. And go to harrys.com/Anfield. So that's harrys.com/Anfield to have your set delivered, a starter shave plan, and your freebie shower gel will be thrown in there as well. Hope you enjoy it. And thanks to Harrys for supporting us.
It's great to have Taylor Hines with us from Liverpool Women's Team. Taylor, thanks so much for coming in today and joining us. I just want to go back to the start a bit, because I know that you joined Liverpool obviously in 2020, but I'm always really interested, especially for women's players, how you got into the game, because I never got a chance to play football. So it's quite interesting to see how you started and how you got into the game, and when you realised you could do this as a job.
No, yeah, thank you for having me. Well, I started obviously when I was about 7 years old. My brother used to play football. I feel like we were quite a sporty household. Like, even my mum and dad, they like sports as well. But yeah, just growing up, I used to do loads of different sports, and I think one thing, it was just football that stood out for me. And obviously my brother playing football, I think when I was younger, I just wanted to do what my brother did, copy my brother all the time. So when he'd go to his games, I'd go along with him, and I'd probably just be on the side kicking the ball around. And we ended up playing for the same team but a different age group, and then my dad was my manager as well, so it was quite a family team. But no, yeah, that's how I started, and probably thanks to my brother.
Was there a point where you thought, okay, I want to do this as a job, or you knew that you had that something that it took to be able to do it professionally and make it a career?
Yeah, I think I just loved it so much, and obviously growing up I did other sports and I used to dance as well and do other things, but it got to a stage where I had to choose. I was doing too much. I was doing swimming and I just thought, no, I just want to play football. I love playing football. And in the end, I had to choose and I chose football, and I'm so glad I did, because of where I am now. But yeah, no, I think it's just, I just love the game and there's so much passion in this game, and no, it's just amazing to play football.
And you've sort of been, you know, through that career, I think you've turned professional at 18, and you've sort of seen how the women's game progressed as you've been growing up and been immersed in it. Do you think that there's been a lot of progress with how people view women's football and the attention around it and the fans? I guess you've been able to witness that literally, you know, year on year.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really improved. I think there's still a long way to go. But from when I was 13 and the players who I used to look up to and the amount of fans that I could see at the women's games compared to now, whereas probably I'm the one that some of the girls look up to, and there's more fans coming to our games, and it's just amazing to see how much is progressing. And like I said, there's still a long way to go, but it's heading in the right direction.
Yeah, it's great. I was at Prenton Park at the weekend. It's great to see all the young fans come over at the end and just want to meet you all and talk to you all. You obviously joined, I think, during the pandemic, so you probably played your first season without any fans. So how has it been having them all back and feeling like you can finally build that connection with them all properly in person?
Yeah, I think I was so used to playing without fans from last season that the first game of the season that we did play with fans, it was like, it felt like there was so many people there because I wasn't used to it. But it's so nice to have them there because it's like everyone says, it's like your 12th man, and they just, I don't know, they just give you a bit more of that energy and they just help you through the games. And obviously it's nice to see them at the end of the game and say thank you for coming. And obviously there's a lot of girls and boys there that want your signatures and stuff like that, so it's nice to give back to them for coming to watch us.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at your career a little bit, obviously you started at Arsenal and you went to Everton, which you probably don't like to talk about too much now, but you obviously joined for Liverpool in 2020. What made you want to join the club, and how have you found being here in the city and playing for Liverpool?
Well, I love the city to start off with, obviously being in Liverpool for 2 years before that, but I think just Liverpool, the club itself, it's such a big club and it's such a family club, and just everyone in Liverpool is so nice, not just the club but in the city itself, and that just makes me feel at home now, and I'm so happy to be playing for this club. And yeah, it's just, I think it's one of the best decisions I've made.
Amazing. And there's quite a few new players this year. Obviously, you're working towards promotion. You've had Katie Stengel come in recently. She was in the studio a couple of weeks ago. It seems like you're at a stage where you're all just really gelling really well, all getting on really well, and the morale in the team is really good. Can you give us a bit of an insight into what it's like in training, into what the mood in the team is like at the moment as you're going for promotion?
Yeah, definitely. I think the team's amazing. Like I say, probably this is one of the best teams that I've been with, like with how close we all are, and I think our psychologist and the staff like Beardy have really helped with that. We do a lot of work obviously off the pitch with the psychologist, and recently it's been really helping. But no, the girls are great. There's so much banter within the team, and I think that's probably what keeps us going, is just trying to relax and stay calm and stay positive, and obviously we take that to the pitch as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Beardy there. I think you've worked with three managers during your time at Liverpool. How's it been working with Matt this season, and how do you feel like he's helped you progress your game and the team as a whole?
No, yeah, I really enjoy working with Matt. He's a great manager because he's just really honest, and he keeps pushing you, and for me, myself, he keeps pushing me, and he'll just tell me to play with a smile on my face, and for me, that's when I'm at my best, is just when I'm playing with a smile on my face, when I'm confident, and that's really helped me to progress this season. And he's just working on things individually with him to help me progress as a player. It's been really good.
So he just encouraged you to go out and enjoy it, and said that the results and the rest will follow, because it feels like that from an outside perspective as a fan, that you're all just enjoying it so much and the results and the success are coming after that.
Yeah, definitely. I think he always says just take one game at a time, and don't put pressure on yourselves, and that's what we need to keep not doing, because obviously there's a lot of talk behind it about the promotion, but we just need to relax and just focus on ourselves and, like Birdie says, just take one game at a time.
Have you had any highlights of the season so far for you personally or as a team?
I'd defo say probably recently one of my individual ones, probably my goal against Coventry. I think that's like one of the best goals I've scored really, so I was obviously happy with that. And I think just as a team, just where we are in the league, obviously we're, I don't know how many games now, unbeaten, whether that's a draw or a win. And to have that going forward and going into each game is really positive, and it's probably what keeps us like motivated to wanting to get that win and draw, because obviously now we're close to promotion, but we just got to keep our head on our shoulders.
Yeah, and you made your 50th appearance at the weekend. What are you looking to improve in the seasons ahead, and what's your aims for your time at Liverpool? And you've obviously signed a new contract as well and committed your future to the club, so how do you see the next few years panning out, and what are your big aims?
To get 50 caps already is a great achievement for me. I'm quite proud of it, and to get 50 for Liverpool, yeah, it means a lot to me. I think, yeah, I just see Liverpool as being my club now, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else, and I just love being here, and I love being around the people in Liverpool. I think I just want to keep up my consistency of playing, being happy, being confident, obviously just keep getting in the starting lineup, and hopefully with that I can progress with England as well, and hopefully getting a senior call up one day.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. And I just want to look ahead a bit to the weekend. It's obviously a huge game in the title and everything. You're playing Durham, and you played them back in November. You won 2-0. What kind of team are they to play against, people that perhaps haven't seen much of them this season or at all?
They're definitely an aggressive team and well-structured, and we know that they're hard to beat down. But we've just got to play like we've been playing, and hopefully the 3 points will come. We know it's going to be a tough game. It always is against Durham, but that's what we want. We want those tough games, and we want to come out with a win and like prove to everyone that we can.
You're looking forward to the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, Durham, the last game against Durham was a completely different game, and I think the fans really helped with that and really motivated us all as well. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to hopefully another 3 points.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I'm not sure if you know about everything going on at the weekend. There's a big Standard Chartered putting on a big fan zone. There's John Barnes, Farrah Williams going to be there. There's a live DJ. There's also free buses from Stanley Park. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, go and get them, because it's going to be a really great weekend. It's a big event going on. Did you know all that was happening around it? Or?
No, I might get to the game earlier.
Go and get involved in all the fans. Yeah, it's really good. I like the sound of a live DJ. I mean, I know John Barnes and Farrah Williams are there, but the live DJ sounds great too.
I know, so I'll definitely be there now.
Yeah, but going to the women's game is a great day out anyway. So if any of you are listening and you haven't been, it's a really good weekend, would you say, to come and support you all and be there at the sidelines?
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we can get that win for you if you do decide to come.
Yeah, I'm sure you will get that win. But thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us. It's been great to have you in the studio. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and can't wait to celebrate you when we're sure you'll get promotion.
Thank you.
And it's John Gibbons with another read through courtesy of Audioboom, and this is for NordVPN. NordVPN are partnering with us again, and we really appreciate it, and we're using their services at the moment and enjoying it and very much getting the benefits, and we'll continue to get the benefits as we get on our travels with the Reds. And yeah, there's a few different, well, there's lots of benefits for NordVPN, but just to run through a few of them, it does allow you to access content from over 59 different countries by changing your virtual location with one click. So if you live, for example, in the UK, but you'd like to watch a sports game, for example, that wasn't on telly in the UK but was on telly elsewhere, just one click allows you to do so. And I can imagine that would be very handy for a lot of the people who are listening to this. But also, if you are travelling and you want to, you know, keep on traps with your favourite TV programmes as they're going out, you can do that as well. Another benefit to it is when you're travelling, we often use unsecure airport or restaurant Wi-Fi, so you'll get that alert on your phone, which is always a bit worrying that the Wi-Fi using as unsecure. This gives you a lot of peace of mind while traveling. The NordVPN on your phone, a laptop or iPad will protect you from any hackers. And also, you might hear lots of people saying that VPNs slow down your internet speed. Now, NordVPN has the fastest VPN in the world. So there we are. They've also got a fantastic special offer at the moment. So if you go to nordvpn.com/wrap, that's a nordvpn.com/wrap. Use the code WRAP when you get there to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus an additional month free, plus a bonus gift. And it is completely risk-free as well with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you have a go and it's not for you, you can get your money back. That is how confident they are you'll enjoy the service. We really appreciate having them on board. So thanks a lot to NordVPN.
Lauren, I'll go to you first on this, on Liverpool women. We find ourselves with them where this was what we asked for. You and I sat in meetings with the club. We sat in different situations. We talked about one thing, which was get yourselves back into the top flight. It's actually hard, I think, to put into words how big the next sort of four matches are for Liverpool women, because if they can achieve everything they would like to achieve this season, get themselves back playing WSL football, the club has fallen behind some of those WSL teams, but they will be able to rebuild in the WSL environment and get a Liverpool women's team that we can be proud of, not just this season. We should be proud of them this season, but proud of them for 10, 15 seasons to come.
Yeah, we definitely did fall behind a couple of seasons ago. And I think the club have held their hands up to that now and realised that they have done that. So it's so important to get promotion for next season, just to kind of get ourselves back up in there. And, you know, you're not going to go into next season being able to compete with your Arsenals and your Chelseas and your Man Cities, but that's a five-year plan. That's in 5 years' time for us to say we can be challenging for a league title, hopefully, fingers crossed, when that time comes. So, yeah, and, you know, you can look at it and think, oh, we could have done this better, we could have done that better, but there's no point in dwelling on what we could have done two seasons ago. It's time to focus on the remaining fixtures for this season and think about what we can do to rebuild in the summer to go again in the top flight.
The idea, Emma, of grabbing the now is what I think Liverpool women have done this season. There's a comment there saying we've been poor with our women's team and facilities compared to Chelsea and City. I mean, that also feeds into the previous conversation, if we're honest about it, to an extent. But not enough, I would hasten to add. But further to that, this is the idea of grabbing the opportunity that's in front, the increased exposure, sponsorship within the WSL, but also just in general, a women's team, a Liverpool women's team to be proud of, is the job that's been done so far this season. That's what put them in the position they're in now, and that's why what happens next is so important.
100%, because this Liverpool side, when they got relegated, it was in circumstances of, you know, it was during COVID, it was points per game basis for those who might not know. So they went down having almost had it taken out of their hands. Therefore, they felt a little bit unjust by it. And then obviously, you know, the initial plan was to come straight back up. That didn't happen. So it almost feels like it's overdue, them kind of returning back to the WSL. And I know that might sound quite elitist, but for a club like Liverpool, who were back-to-back league champions in 2013, 2014, you know, that's only 6 years ago. You know, if you think sort of, you know, figure that about that in terms of Premier League, imagine a team being back-to-back Premier League champions and then 6 years later competing in the Championship. It's absolutely unfathomable. Can't say that word. There we go. So for the women's team to be in that position, I think it's almost even greater than the reward of them coming back to the top and being back to the heights. And that's why this season has been one that, rightly so, as you say, should absolutely be celebrated, because the job that they've done so far has been fantastic. Obviously, they still need to get over the line, but getting over that finish line, the rewards in terms of the long term will, for me, feel almost so much greater, because they kind of, you know, they went from the peak, suffered because of faults at Liverpool, which, as Lauren says, they've rightly acknowledged other faults in terms of, you know, the relegation and the way it happened. They've gone through that. And almost the benefits of returning now are going to be so much greater because of the broadcast deals, etc.
The season can be broken, I think, into segments, Lauren, so far. There's the early running, where Liverpool looked like they were just establishing themselves. Then they arguably went through a run where they played some excellent stuff, dominated every game that they played. the last three or four matches, it's felt like they've got a little bit nervy. Maybe oppositions have wised up to what they do a little bit more. Charlton restrict them to one goal across two games. It feels as though they've maybe just dried up a tiny little bit in front of goal, which has been a problem for them in the past. Are you concerned with these games to come?
I don't think I'm concerned. I think it's more... I get what you're saying about goals drying up and stuff. You know, Charlton at the weekend is a prime example of a team that we probably should be going and beating. And, you know, I think us playing them back-to-back, that kind of helped work in their favour in terms of how they could sort of...
I thought it did, well.
Yeah, but then, I don't know, I think the squad's in too much of a good moment and a good place for them to get nervous. You know, we spoke to Rhiannon Roberts after the game on Sunday, and she said although that it was a draw and, you know, there was no, we didn't score, we also don't concede very often either. You know, touch woods, that's gone really well for us this season. So although the goals may have dried up in front of goal, you know, Leanne Kiernan was on absolute amazing form the last couple of games. She seems to have dropped off a little bit. Stengel dropped off a little bit. But, you know, it's not a cause for concern, I don't think, because it only takes one or two goals to win a football match, and that anyone in this team can do that. We've had 15 different scorers, so...
Well, just on Lauren's point there, John, in terms of the season, I think as we get closer and closer to the close of it, it feels as though Liverpool's finest performer and the one you can really build a WSL charge around in the first place has been Rachel Laws in goal. It's a phenomenal campaign where she's, I think, only conceded six league goals as we sit here and chat. It's now 18 games in. She's so commanding, so controlled. It isn't as simple as the saves that she makes either. She dominates the whole sort of, I'd say, back 20 yards of the pitch, kicks the ball beautifully, finds people all the time. She is the sort of rock you can build a run in on, I think it's fair to say.
And can take into Super League One with you as well. And I think sometimes it's hard to sort of judge from a squad, well, who is it, you know, who's going to, you know, be able to sort of take that step up and who isn't. But I think, you know, for me, the goalkeepers, there's no doubt really. And I think, you know, Riley Foster's obviously accident was a terrible thing, and it's great that she's been back at Anfield to watch it and to cheer on a team and things like that. But Rachel Laws is just first class. And I think, you know, as you said, how she commands herself at a sort of calm and influence on the side as well is a big reason, you know, as well as the formation change, which I think worked really well, but a big reason why, you know, we have conceded so few goals this season. And Lauren's right, where you can get to a situation where you think, oh, the goals are dried up by school games. You know, unless Bristol City can beat us in that game, I think we'll be okay. And if they want to beat us, they have to score. And that's been very, very difficult for a lot of teams, you know, who've come up against Liverpool. So we'll see. It's a big weekend, not just for Liverpool, but also Bristol City, who go away to Sheffield United, who aren't in the
first,
best form,
but a first as well, which is it gives Liverpool the chance, just the chance that they might drop points.
Yeah, Sheffield United aren't in the best form, but we lost last time out, but they're a good team. And so I think, you know, I think we could be in a good place at the end of the weekend, I think, going into that sort of Bristol City game.
Talking, the whole point of this, Emma, has been the promotion push. Let's be absolutely clear. Liverpool have hard lines. I think it's fair to say at home against Arsenal in the 4-0, in that there's two absolute wonder strikes that kill the game before the break. But it did show a little bit of the gulf, and it did show, I think, the gulf in terms of fitness, in terms of a couple of other aspects there as well. But all of that said, if they do pull this off from this position, let's just imagine they do it with four wins, it'd be difficult to be much more dominant. You know, the idea that they could well finish this season only conceding six league goals, you know, that's a level of dominance that you very rarely see across a whole division. And that's the strange thing about being nervous about this right now. And I am a tiny little bit nervous. It's a strange thing to be nervous about, because it could be that, you know, we talk again after these next four games and you're like, what were we ever worried about? Because they could make it look that comfortable by the end.
Yeah, I wasn't nervous in the slightest. And then I've done two podcasts, which you've been on, Neil, and now I'm nervous. So I'm completely blaming you. But no, you're right. I mean, the way that, look, Liverpool squad on paper, and I've said this the whole way through the season, I still stand by it, is quite comfortably the best squad in the Women's Championship at the moment, to the point where anything other than, you know, going up was just going to be unacceptable, to put it bluntly. So they've dominated, but that's what I think was expected from a, you know, a purely footballing sense. Obviously, there's a lot more around it in terms of the pressure and the mentality, et cetera, and they dealt with that really well. But the quality of the squad has shown so far, and it should, that should continue in the next four games. There's absolutely no reason why they should drop the levels in terms of, as I say, purely on a footballing point of view. But that is part of the fact that this plan of going back up, it has been a stage in process. It's been a long-term thing. It's not just a case of Liverpool just ticking that box and going back up and being, yeah, that's it. Like, we've done our job. We're back in the WSL now. No, it's about Liverpool as a club wanting to almost stamp their authority on women's football again and get back to the heights that they were. And therefore, the way that they play and the identity they play with, the quality of the players coming through, the culture around the club, it's elite now. You know, it's about getting back to the WSL, but then maintaining those elite standards that they've shown in a dominant way in the Championship. They want to take that on into the WSL. They don't just want to be there. They want to be there and then grow and compete. And as Oren says, hopefully in, you know, 5 years' time, be up there with Chelsea, Arsenal, and City, and be competing for the league title.
Just on this idea of the game this weekend, Lauren, you know, you've been doing wonderful work with Amy covering Liverpool women for far longer than we have. And it's worth pointing out the sort of psychic space that Durham have occupied since time immemorial, it feels like, around Liverpool women. You know, Durham are Liverpool's bogey team. The significance of the win there earlier in the season, the nature of it, how dominant it was, it felt like it was a massive, massive moment for Liverpool women earlier in the season when they went there and won 2-0. They've now got another massive game against Durham this weekend. You do feel a little bit like if they do the business again against Durham, especially the way they did in the away fixture, everyone will come out of Prenton Park thinking it's just a matter of time before we make this happen.
Yeah, it's, Durham is always that team that me and Amy look for at the beginning of the season to say, when do we play them and what's the fixtures before and after and et cetera. But yeah, they haven't been on the best of form this season. It's weird that they haven't been a team to go up in the last couple of seasons. It's that type of team. But yeah, a huge game against them on Sunday. But yeah, it's like you said, if you're coming out to Prenton Park with a win on Sunday, going into that Bristol game, your confidence is sky high. You know, that's potentially the league done. So I think that's the players' mentality sort of going into that as well. It's just focus on each game as it comes, which is kind of the boring answer that every footballer gives after every game. But it is, isn't it? But yeah, going, if you come out of, you know, with a... it could be a scrappy 1-0 win at a last-minute goal like it was at Watford. I wouldn't care. As long as we got the 3 points that you can take away from there, then that's all that matters for that game to me.
It's why Sunday is massive, John. You mentioned it before. They're hoping to get a massive crowd down at Prenton Park. And it's a shame we can't be there. We are, unfortunately, in Belfast, Dublin and Cork. Buy your tickets. If you haven't already, we'll be having some night. I mean, I might get me graphic back about the spending, to be honest with you, for me opening monologues in there. Do bear that in mind around those little bits and pieces. But there is, John, for me... there's no bigger game, really, than this one on Sunday. It couldn't be bigger for everything that's been achieved so far this season, because all of that's been achieved so far this season, it will just simply be defined by whether or not they go up. Sunday, massive crowds, loads of stuff beforehand for everyone who's going down, everything that you need for it to be absolutely perfect, for weather could be great as well. You know, it's all coming together for a raucous atmosphere in Prenton Park.
Yeah, they're really hopeful of a big crowd, and let's hope so, because, you know, that could be the thing that gets Liverpool over the line. And I know the team and the players have been so grateful for the away following, and you know people have been putting on coaches to get the crowds down there, and they've been very vocal, and the players and manager are made up with the support that they've got. But now it's back at Anfield, isn't it? And there's a chance to do that, you know, times 10, 100, whatever it is, you know, and to get a real crowd in there and to help see Liverpool over the line. I don't think they will be nervous yet. They might be if they don't get a result Sunday and Bristol City do the business, but I don't think we're quite there yet. But it will help, you know, if there's a big crowd down there and Liverpool are sort of feeling that support. So, as you say, Neil, unfortunately, you can't get down with over in Ireland, but there'll be a few from the Anfield Wrap down there. And yeah, go and enjoy it. Take the family and cheer the Reds on. And hopefully we'll all get to watch them in the Super League One next season.
Excellent stuff. They got a win on Sunday, Emma?
Oh, 100%. Of course we are.
That's the spirit, Lauren.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent stuff, John. It's all done. Now, you don't even have to answer, to be honest with you. Emma and Lauren have done it, but do you agree with them?
Yeah, the only question for me is how long Emma's in the clip before after.
I'm not going to in Newcastle, so...
I've done public service announcements in the local press. Just to warnings for that sort of stuff, I'd like to think.
South Island, I might go to that.
Yeah, sounds well better, to be honest with you. We can't wait for Ireland. It's going to be fantastic. Listen, it's been a pleasure. Great to have Emma. Great to have Lauren. Great to have John. It's been your tour live this week. It really has. Everything that we've covered all the way through is all but a soup ton of excitement about everything that's going on with this football club at the moment. It is a great time to be a Liverpool supporter. You can download the Anfield Wrap app. It might add to your enjoyment. I'd hope so. That is the aim of the whole thing. If it doesn't, send me a strongly worded email and we'll go from there. And this has ever been a pleasure. It's been tour live. This is the end of it. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.